Ghost Hunting in New England,
your favorite spooky podcast. Hello and happy Wednesday. Welcome to this week's episode of Ghost Hunting in New England with your hosts, Amelia
and Beth.
And today we have such a special guest on with us tonight. Many of you might remember our episode we did in season one on the Peter Oliver House down in Middleborough, Massachusetts. Well, today we have a veteran investigator, as well as the woman who oversees the Oliver House and runs everything, Christy Parrish, with us on tonight to talk all things spooky about what's going on down in Middleborough. So Christy, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you for asking me to come on and talk about something that I truly, truly love. And that is the Oliver House, the passion in my life.
Oh, gosh. And there, I have said on the show before a couple of times that when people are like, where do you think the most haunted spot in Massachusetts is? Oliver House is, I really believe it is one of the most haunted spots. I've felt stuff there. I know a lot of other people who have felt stuff there. You guys give wonderful tours. And the whole thing is just really, really interesting from not just a paranormal standpoint, although there is a lot of interesting paranormal things. We're going to get into that in a minute. But even from a historical standpoint, I mean, it's really fascinating. So I know we did an episode on it, but could you just give us a real quick little synopsis of some of the history behind the Oliver House?
So the Oliver House came about as a wedding present for Dr. Peter Oliver Jr. and his young bride-to-be, Sally Hutchinson. It was their first home. So, of course, they made a lot of imprint on this house. Because it was their first place that they could do whatever they wanted to and put their personality into. They had their children there. They lost a child the first birth. Sally actually lost her daughter. She was 5 months old. But then they had two sons after that. The significance to our American history is the fact that Peter and Sally were staunch loyalists. They were born in Boston as loyalists, and they continued their days throughout as loyal to the crown. And during that time, you had the Sons of Liberty that were kind of bubbling under the surface and kind of rising up and saying, no, I'm not going to pay you any tax money. No, no. This is my tavern. I sell my ale and no taxes will be paid. And so therein starts the bickering and the downfall and the downslide for the loyalist control in New England, as it was referred to, because it was a new land that was run by the King of England, King George. So Sally and Peter, in their time in the house, they had trials, they had tribulations, and there was a lot of politics going on around them, and their world was crumbling. Slowly but surely, it was slipping away from them. And in September of 1774, there was a group of men that came to the house that was led by Reverend Sylvanus Brown. And they gave Peter and Sally this ultimatum that you can leave with the clothes on your back and your children and your safety right now. We won't harm you, or else we're going to take this house from you. So they had no choice but to leave all their belongings and everything that they had worked to build as their beautiful home behind, because people can't be replaced. Items can. And the Olivers, during that time, were the wealthiest family in Massachusetts Bay. No other family had more money than the Olivers, so they could buy it back if need be. It goes further than that. And what I think gives people chills when I do a historic tour, which I love to do those, is we get to talk about how Judge Peter Oliver moved to the Middleborough area in 1744. And he started manufacturing household goods, sheets of metal that were slit to make nails, and most importantly, ammunition, musketballs, cannonballs, and such. And even the actual guns themselves that actually use this, I think he did manufacture those too. We're finding that out slowly but surely, more detail. So what's important to keep in mind is when the sons confiscated the house, the day they visited Peter and Sally in 1774, they ripped down everything that they had, carefully made an inventory list. They itemized it. Then they sold these items, these Tory-owned items, They made their way over to a bigger house, which was owned by the judge, and he had been gone for several months already in the city. He had already fled. You know, I removed and inventoried some of those items too and sold those as well, because no matter how you slice it, the Sons of Liberty wanted to fight a war. They wanted to break free of Tory rule, and they needed ammunition and guns to do this. So the kick in the teeth is that when the very first shots were fired in Lexington Concord that started the American Revolution in 1775, it was using Tory-made ammunition that was bought by Tory-sold goods from the Oliver House.
Oh, interesting.
That's what makes this whole, and every time I tell it, this is weird, because I'm sitting here and all my hairs are standing up in the back of my neck and arm. I get the chills every single time I tell people about that. There's like this silence, you know, in the room, and people take a gasp, and they was like, oh, I never realized that that really just happened here. And I'm standing in this house where these things happen. And I was like, welcome to the Oliver House, but we're not done. Oh, no, no. It gets even better. There were so many layers of activity that happened there. Amelia, you've been there and you can feel it. When you walk in when you walk into the front door inside the walls of that house, you feel like eyes on you. You know that they're kind of sizing you up and trying to fill you out, see what's going on with you. They're in our heads. They know our thoughts. They know our intentions. So I always tell people to tread lightly and take their time and ease into this, because the spirits have to ease into your presence as well. We have another huge imprinted family there inside the house, not just the Olivers, is the Weston Sproat family. And Thomas Weston was there from 1798 is when he purchased the house until 1834 when he passed away. Now he raised his children there and his had a big family. And upon his passing, he willed his house to his daughter, Bethania Weston. And then she inherited this in 1834. And at the time, she was being courted by a businessman, a farmer, and a land surveyor by the name of Earl Sproat. Earl decided during his time that he wanted to take the Oliver Mill that was originally constructed by Judge Oliver. He wanted to revamp it a little bit, and he didn't want to do household goods, nails, and the things that the judge did years before. He wanted to actually manufacture one thing, and that is shovels. That's all he made was shovels. And we actually found a shovel buried beside the garden that was made over at the mill by Earl Sproat that we had inside the house on display for people to touch and hold and feel. And I was like, you're holding history right here. You're holding a piece of the house, a piece of the story. I say that a lot because the energies there, they give us these tests, these things. And it's all a part of revealing the truth about who they are and the truth about the property. And it leads us down the research path, you know. And that's when you start to uncover even more and more details, more than like a quick thing that you read on the internet about, well, it was owned by this and this and this and this. Then you start to get into finding the diaries and talking to the descendants and finding out these little details about what they didn't like to be called and what they did. Were they an alcoholic? Were they not? You know, and I think as we go on with the research and working for the Oliver estate to restore it and keep it alive, I think that we built this beautiful relationship with them. And I feel like they're family, and I have a responsibility to get it right. So,
yes. And you do an amazing job finding the history, the historical history, but the personal history. Like you said, these little details about each person.
Yes.
Not only that, I will say very quickly, the interior of the house is beautiful too. I mean, you guys do, you know, both times I've been there and the second time I went with Beth, you know, they have the lights that you guys do that are beautiful. And it's just, it's a cool ambiance in there. I love what you've done. How did you end up there? That's something I'm very interested in.
Oh, well.
You don't have a typical Massachusetts accent or anything. I mean, so it seems like it might be a bit of a trip for you to have gotten all the way here.
It was exactly 1,186 miles from my door in Tennessee to the door of the Oliver House. That's how crazy I am about this place. I will sit there and map it out and figure out how far I'd have to travel by car to get to it. But no, I was already in New England, and I had moved to Norwood, Massachusetts, and I was working in, and I still continue to work in Boston for the American Bank Note Company that was founded by Paul Revere.
Oh, interesting.
Very cool.
So what brought me to the area was my background in secure printing. And so when they moved the facility in Tennessee to Boston, I kind of came up with it for a short period of time. And they liked me, so they decided to keep me. I was originally supposed to be here for 6 months just to get operations going. And after we were up and running, then they was like, nope, I think we're going to hang on to her if she'll stay. So I stayed in Boston in Norwood with my job. And I had been doing the paranormal for a long time already. I got into it many years ago. It's got to be 20 years. I know it was 2001 when I started to experience a lot of severe activity. And I couldn't find anybody to help me with it. So I just did the one thing that I truly do with every situation. And that's read, learn, and try to understand. Mm-hmm. That's all anybody can do in any situation. And I thought, well, I'm going to try to prove to people these things are really happening to me. I'm not nuts. And maybe in the process of it, I'm going to be able to understand it enough to be able to subside this activity and maybe help people, other people in the process of it. So that's how I got started in that part of it, the paranormal part. After being in New England for a little while, they had a convention in Salem, Massachusetts at the Hawthorne Hotel called Salem Con. I thought, I'm going to go check this out. So I got tips and went up and was sitting in the bar there having lunch at the Hawthorne Hotel restaurant, having my chicken strips because that's my go-to ghost hunt food right there. And
we all have our regular routines that we go through, right?
Yeah, I'm like a walking, talking chicken nugget. I mean, really. Yeah. So as I was having lunch, this lady sat down at the bar beside me and started to have a conversation with me. And we just started to chat, you know, and she said something to me about this place in Middleborough, Massachusetts. It's an old house built in the 1700s, and there's claims of activity there. People claim they've recorded voices inside the house. And I was like, that sounds fascinating. You know, I'm new to the area. I don't know. So I'm like, this sounds like an interesting place. And she says, well, I'm thinking about starting ghost hunts and ghost tours there. Would this be something you'd be interested in helping with? If, you know, I see you've got background with it, maybe you could help me get this going. So I thought, this is a great opportunity. You know, I'm not going to turn this down. I'll go. I'll see the property. Worst case scenario, if I'm not feeling it, then I just walk away. I can tell you, and you know, as you're sitting there, I never walked away. I was absolutely, from the moment I drove up the driveway and stepped foot on the outside grounds, I always felt like I was home. And this is exactly where I was meant to be. So a random meeting, a random encounter led me there. But there's something deeper, I think, that holds me there. And that's kind of my journey with the house, mm-hmm. trying to understand that. So does that answer your question?
It does, yes. How serendipitous too, that it's like this one little meeting and just changed the course of everything.
Yes, it's actually, it's interesting you say that word, serendipitous. That's one of my favorite words.
Me too.
I've always loved it. It just rolls off and it just has so much mystery and interest to it. But there was also a tour, a person taking a historic tour. And when I checked in on the security cameras today to watch the tour in progress, that's one thing he brought up too, is about the resilience of the house and how paintings seem to make their way back that were original to the house. The skeleton key comes back to the house after being lost for many, 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 many years. The front door made its way back onto the original structure of the house like it was in 1769, but it wasn't always there. And so he said, this house is really serendipitous. And I was like, he had me at serendipitous. This man gets it. He really does. He really does.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so the history is phenomenal. And then the ghosts there, I mean, when you walk in, you feel an energy, right? And when you walk around, you feel an energy. I've never felt nothing but a good energy, right? Ever.
True.
And
it's always positive.
Always positive. And you guys get a lot of feelings. I was there. The first time I was there was 2019. I was there with a friend who was British and who was very much a skeptic. But he, however, did feel something. And I like almost passed out when he said that because he's a scientist and just did not. He was just there because I asked him to be. And then we were talking and we were like, well, he's from England and they were loyal to us. So obviously if he's there, like that's the one they're going to want to talk to. Then Beth and I, we went to an event with Brian Cano, who listeners might know from Paranormal Caught on Camera and The Paranormal Collector. He was on as well. And he had an event. And Beth and I went. And we were getting EVPs. And that I could not believe. I could not believe that EVPs were out because there was like probably about 20 of us. We were all there and it was, you know, tail end of the pandemic and people are still wearing masks and we're all like huddled in the hallway. And I'm looking at Beth and I'm like, no way are we going to get an EVP. There's like 20 freaking people in here. Like, come on.
That's like, a tough one. Yeah.
Like Beth and I, we've done places before and kind of like our rule is like, because we went to that place up in Beverly, and I think that was when we decided it was just like there were five of us, and we were like, five is too many to get EVPs. Like, someone's always switching or moving or something's going on. But then we got some in the Peter Oliver house, these like 20 people. And it was like the same question, like, how old are you? And both times we heard 29 at two different spots. And it was really fascinating, truly fascinating. And on the first episode we had a recording from you. We had a recording from Chris, who you work with. And Chris telling that great story about the apparition coming out of the closet.
Yes.
And, telling her, shh, and like going back into the closet, into the wall. It's one of my favorite ghost stories.
Yes.
But beyond that, I was watching last night. You appeared on Kindred Spirits season five.
That's correct.
And it was a very interesting episode. And you were talking about the zombie boy, quote unquote zombie boy, who you guys have there. And could you tell us a little bit about that?
About zombie boy?
Yes.
So we had several photographs that started to filter into us after private teams came in and investigated the prop. The first photograph that we got was from a lady named Toni Orlando. And she actually photographed a full body apparition in a room that was empty with everybody else inside one space. And she was photographing across the hall and she happened to capture this apparition. And it's kind of a creepy picture to look at because you see this dark hair in one part of it. And this face that's kind of messed up a little bit. And then you see second face that's kind of peeling away from it. It's very interesting. And I really didn't have words for her at the time when she shared the photo. And I asked her, I said, do you mind if I share this? When we have ghost hunting events, public ghost tours, I'd like to share evidence with people's names that actually collected it if they give us permission and see if others can go out and capture something similar. Or maybe even debunk it. And so she allowed me to share that. And it was, I'm going to say about 6 months later, that there was a man photographing in that very same room where the apparition was actually caught from across the hall. In a reflection in the mirror, he caught this gray figure, this gray face behind them, standing behind them in the reflection. And I start looking, at those things. And I'm like, you realize that this is the same person.
So as you're looking at the picture, though, because I'm looking at the picture that you sent us, the best way that I could actually describe this is it looks like someone standing in the back wearing like a hockey mask, like Jason or something, because it's almost like too white and then it's got dark spots all over it. You can't make out any features of the face at all, except there's dark spots for the eyes. And the bridge of the nose appears to just have some sort of light that glimpsed off of it. But it is frightening.
It's creepy, isn't it?
Yeah. And I don't know how this poor guy who took the picture got home and doesn't spend all of his time looking over his shoulder. Like, is that thing still following me around? So the picture that you talked about across the hall, did you send that to us as well?
I did.
Is that this one?
That's that. Yeah, that's right. The picture.
And so
yeah,
I should be looking.
That's the original. Yes.
Right. So look in the doorway.
Yep. It's in the doorway. So in that particular picture, you got to keep in mind the bedposts. There's bedposts that photograph.
Okay. So I'm looking at this little white spot right over here.
That's where the apparition is. And that's across the hall. Right.
And 100%, that is the exact same.
It looks like the same form.
Yeah.
Yeah. To look at the hair formation and all of that.
Yep.
So
all of it. That's crazy.
And we don't know who he is at this point. We have no idea what he is. And we don't know why he's appearing in that one space. Never in any other rooms did anybody ever take any photographs or say that I saw a reflection or any of that. Now, so this led me down this path because I do care about the house and I care about the children within the house. And I noticed that there seemed to be like a tension that was going on, like a little bit of some fear, some trepidation. I noticed it. I could feel it when all this started happening. And I thought, I have a responsibility to those on the other side to try to keep them safe and to try to understand what's happening here. I need everybody to be comfortable in their home. I don't know what this is. We didn't have any conversation with it. We had no responses from it. The only thing that I noticed odd as well, when the first picture was taken and in the months to come, is that the men who investigated that area up there were having some very profound experiences inside that room. And I'm piecing this together and I'm thinking, well, we now have something that we don't understand, and now people are being affected. Men particularly are being affected. They're losing time. They're coming out white as a ghost because they saw something they can't wrap their brains around. What's going on, and how is this affecting the kids, the Sprouts, and the other children that could possibly be in the house? I have to do something about it. So I reached out to them and Amy and Adam, and I was like, I need to get some answers about this. I don't know what we're dealing with here. I really don't. And so they came and they spent the week, and pretty much right off the bat, you know, I knew that just like any other investigator, you want to try your own experiments and you want to try to do something. Mm-hmm. So I already knew that they were going to try something, but we never talked to it before. They gave them a personality. They gave them an identity and all of that. And I was like, what is going on here? This is not what we do. So they investigate and the episode airs and I watch it. And I'm disappointed in it, not for what they did for an experiment, but more so the fact that they're standing in this very intense historical location with so many layers, and nobody sees the house except for maybe one room in the outside in the dark. They don't get to feel the house. And it's interesting also because they showed me a tremendous amount of footage that they were actually EVPs and voices and other things that they captured through their week there at the tail end, but none of that made the cut. Nobody ever saw any of that. They only saw about this one situation. I'm not mad at Amy or Adam for what they did, because at the end of the day, they have a show and they need to do things and they need to have their audience, you know, think about it, push the envelope, I guess, for entertainment purposes. But, you know, I felt like they missed the boat in getting the answer about him. Now, I will tell you this. They were almost on the right path, but then they left the path. What we found out through other investigative teams and psychic mediums that came to the house, one night I had three psychic mediums and they travel together and they go to these different places. And right off the bat, the women walked upstairs into that space and they came downstairs and told me about David. And this was the very name that Amy said at the show, but I thought it was a descendant. But they said, David. And I was like, okay, Dave, I'm still thinking the descendant. And she's like, no, he needs help. And the spirits of the house are trying to tell you that. Did he say that? No, he doesn't have the voice. It's the Oliver House spirits that are telling you he needs help. And then they tell me the story of David. And we have yet to confirm it yet, but he basically was a little intoxicated and he was driving on the main road. And it was back when cars first came about and they didn't have all the, you know, defrost technology that we have today.
Safety belts.
And safety belts. And they were like hard, hard metal. No cush-cush living then. And he couldn't see well and he was trying to clear his window and he lost control of the car. And the car went over into the water, into the Nemasket, and it hit and he smashed his face into the car. And that's why the appearance is the way it is.
Really?
And that's why he looks gray in certain ways that he was photographed, is because he's in the water. Now, it was cold. The one lady told us it was very cold and it felt like razors. Piercing the water, piercing his skin. So I'm also wondering if the water wasn't up because of flooding and his car went over and he floated on the deep part of the river, down the river behind the property. And she kept saying, in the west, where the brook is. And I'm like, how would she know about the brook? There is a brook in the west of the house. And so I'm thinking, got to go back there. You know, this happened even in the like 1920s or 30s. And he was like 29 or so, I think he was. She said he was in his 20s, which was interesting about the age that came up, because I was like, holy crap, this is more information, I think, filtering to us. And it's not that the house was spared, I don't think. And that's why I was feeling this intensity. I think it was, how in the world are we going to get her to figure this out, or anybody to figure this out? I mean, that is what we have come to learn about the quote unquote zombie boy. And we only said that because we had no idea what else we were looking at.
Yeah.
It's kind of creepy.
It is creepy.
But sure. Now I have a name to associate with it. And also I have a responsibility to try to go back and try to find any kind of evidence the stuff is back there.
So since you found out this name, do you find when you go into the house and like you call out for David, does it feel better? Do you feel more? Do you get anything?
No, it doesn't say anything much about it. It still comes up like during investigations. I don't, when teams come in, I don't like, oh, you know, his name is this, that, and the other. I don't really do that per se. I want them to come with whatever is what they're actually picking up. And then as being responsible for the property, I document this occurrence, you know, from team to team to team to team. What are the similar things that they're coming up saying? You know, we also get the word rape that comes through a lot.
Oh, no.
And so I've had a message the other night that came through from another medium. I'm not going to say her name, but she was giving me some details about a vision that she had picked up for whatever reason. It came to her about that similar situation. And she knows nothing about the house. And she was like, I don't know why, but they keep showing me this. And it was sad. And it was hard. And I told her, yes, we have the word rape that comes up, but we're not sure all the details. So while the house is a happy home, I think there's also a tremendous amount of tragedy. And there's a lot of things that's happened on that property through the years. And there's a lot of probably restless energies that are outside the house, not necessarily inside the house, that we've yet to discover. Because this was out towards the barn area, and we never go out there, really. So if I start going out there, am I going to uncover more truth behind what her vision was?
Also, I mean, that house is old. It's real old.
Yes, it is old.
I mean, you can't expect a house that old to just have positivity in it all the time, right? I mean, there has to be some tragedy when you're dealing with something just so old.
Mm-hmm. I call it the layers. I'm actually in the process of writing about it in a book.
Oh.
I started to document the different layers because I have a theory that at the Oliver House, each layer is feeling the haunting from the previous layer. I think that they're going through it just like we go through it. We can't take for granted that we're the only ones that can experience these different layers. I think they're all going through it all simultaneously. So
interesting.
It's going to be interesting, I think, for people to think of it that way, the way that I see it on a personal level each day.
For sure, yes.
So you want to know something kind of funny?
Yeah, always.
Yes, let's lighten the mood because we talked about some pretty tragic stuff right here. When you came for the History of the Paranormal event, I was thinking to myself, I don't know that Brian really, truly is feeling that this place is as active as what I know it is and other people who've been there is. And I was like, I said something to him. I said, so do you need something that's just kind of in your face? I said that at one point. He was like, yeah, you know, it's really a lot going on here. He kind of avoided the question in his true way. So the day that they were packing up everything and they were going to start back to New Jersey, and we were standing in the front parlor, and he had turned to look out the window over at the van. So he was standing next to one of those little window seats right there. We were talking and he was looking out the window, and I was talking with his manager, and all of a sudden we heard this pop, this loud pop, and the whole curtain rod and the whole fixture that held the curtain rod actually broke loose from the window that he was standing under, and the rod like fell straight down and it almost hit him in the head. He backed away just enough to cradle the bar in his arms. And it was very loud, and it kind of unnerved him, and it unnerved me a little bit.
But it was quite literally in his face.
His face.
Right? Yeah.
That's exactly what I said. I said, how's that for in your face? I said, welcome to the Oliver House.
So they were listening. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. And it was the most interesting thing that, I mean, I called, of course, when anything happens at the house structurally like that, I have to let the town know. And so the facility manager, I took pictures of it. He came over and he looked at it, and he had the architects or the assessors look at it. And I was like, well, it was a hard settle. At that particular moment, while Brian was standing at that window, it just decided, we're going to do a hard settle today. And boom, it just got mad. I was like, okay, go ahead with that. But I'm just going to walk it away with the experiences. I was there. I saw it happen. I saw his face, and this was amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
He's an awesome guy to actually work with. It was a great experience for the History of Paranormal to be in Middleborough, Massachusetts, and choose the Oliver State at the stop, because he's doing that in all 50 states. So we were the one. We were the one for Massachusetts.
And that's very cool.
Yes.
That is cool. We, for that event, Beth and I, we arrived a little late. We were a little tardy, and everyone was taking that photo outside the front. And I went to park the car, and Beth all of a sudden goes, stop. And I go, what? And I jammed the brakes, and I was about to drive off the little cliff part in the front of the house. So that was almost another funny thing that happened. But luckily, Beth stopped me, because wouldn't have that been an entrance for ghost hunting in New England? Everyone's out front, and we just drive off
a cliff right in front of them.
Yeah, let's not do that. We
would have been getting out of the car telling people how the car was clearly possessed.
Yeah,
it has nothing to do with Amelia's driving.
Not with my driving.
Nope.
Yeah. Well, somebody must have seen that on the outside security camera, because right after the event, they extended the parking area. They backfilled it so that you can't. I'm wondering if that's
probably why.
Shocked me. I was like, you guys have done a tremendous amount of work. Something led them to that. I guess it was you too. So thank you for our improved parking area there.
Oh, you're so welcome. I will be willing to almost crash a vehicle into any haunted location to improve parking.
Thank you for that public service announcement, Amelia.
Well, maybe not your new vehicle, but your old vehicle, absolutely. Yeah.
I'll borrow Paul's car. So you sent us over some EVPs. So let's go through some of these right now. So this one I'm about to play is called Hello During Session.
So I can kind of tell you what was going on when this was recorded.
Sure.
We were doing the annual Bridgewater Triangle investigation with Tim Weisberg, and we were trying to go live from the house. It was myself, Chris Andrade, and Julie, another volunteer. We were upstairs in one of the bedrooms, and we were going to ask questions And I've got a free download that is actually made for children. And anything that you say, it will record what you're saying, and then it'll play it backwards. So I thought, I'm going to start using this in ghost hunting, because we're not sure about the frequency, if they speak forward, backwards, or whatever, but you know, we have nothing to lose to try, right? Mm-hmm. And it didn't cost anything. So you're going to hear in the clip, I'm going to start talking and say hello, and then I'm going to play it backwards. And after I play it backwards the first time, you're going to hear a person pushing through saying hello, but that's in the reverse frequency. Ooh. Then I play the same exact clip again, and it's not there on the second playback. So
all right.
This is a cool one.
Let's hear.
This is Christy.
Chris.
Julie.
And we want you to come out and have a conversation with us tonight. Be sociable with us. Can you tell us who you are? Now I'm going to play it backwards.
Hello? Did it just say hello?
Yes.
And that wasn't me, was it?
No. No, it was not.
So I'm going to play this again.
Whoa, that is a good one. Because that was very, very clear. There was no like, maybe it was the house settling, if you will. Like that was very, very, very clear. That was
well, good. Yeah, it was, and it sounded like a young person's voice saying hello as well.
Yeah, and of course, you know, I'm one of these people that's always trying to figure out, you know, what's the easiest way for us to kind of bridge the gap in communication. And I think it's important for those that we're talking to on the other side to give them as many different types of options as well to kind of fill out so that we can see what's going to work the best. And in this case, it just kind of floored me. I was like, that was somebody saying hello. That was crazy, creepy, cool, ridiculous.
Yeah, no, but it's so strange that it wasn't there the second time.
Exactly. And that was another thing I try to teach the investigators at the house and volunteers is that if you get it the first time, you know, play it again and again and again. Maybe you hear it once, maybe it's not there. We don't really know specifically if this was there or if this was an EVP pushing through that frequency, because keep in mind that we're recording on a digital audio recorder the session. So you're recording onto the phone for the backwards playback, but then you're also recording on another device and you're playing it back on that. So could it have been an EVP using that frequency to project through? We're not sure, but it's really a clear piece of audio. It's really a good piece of evidence. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, no, that was incredible. Since this next one is called He Caught Me.
Yes. So it was Chris Andrade, Paul Heber Jr., and myself. We were upstairs in Abigail's room, one of the small bedrooms, sitting in the room, and Paul was standing in the doorway. And he kept looking over his shoulder towards the children's room of the house, like he kept seeing something. So there's a statement made to that effect, and he starts talking about, at one point, how he had taken a picture and he caught the image of a little boy in the picture. And so he's talking about capturing that. And then this whisper, it comes through, he caught me. He's interjecting while this conversation is going on as well. So I like this one too, if they can hear anything.
Let's take a listen.
That's amazing that girls should do that. Do you see something?
No, you know, mirror,
God,
James.
Yeah.
Well, they look at the chair, it's on his back wall, so we caught him. on this box inside of this doorway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's right at the beginning, right?
It's right as Paul is talking about that. It comes to the back side of his voice a little bit, and he talks right after it. So it's after he's talking, as Paul's talking about the mirror.
You see something? No, you know the mirror, God, James?
Yeah.
Well, if you look at the chair, it's on his back wall, so we caught him.
When he says back wall?
Oh, that's when it comes in? I thought that was him talking the whole time.
No, that's another voice that whispers.
All right.
He
no,
says,
I get
like,
it.
The back wall and something, and then it says he caught me, whispery. Very
yes, I heard that he is like he caught me, but I thought it was the other man saying it. But
that's, yeah, I
he didn't
did
say
as
that.
Well.
Then. That's amazing.
And then I was wondering, like, so is this a like what does Barry Corbett call it? Like a sentient, like it's responding to something he said, or did he say he caught me and then the spirit just repeated those sounds? Right, just kind of echoed what he heard. But now that I hear it another time, your Chris there didn't actually say he caught me. So that was all the spirit there coming through. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And then this one I have is, there are certain people.
Oh, I love this. You know, from walking through with a British person in the house, how they have a very particular way that they say thing. It just sounds very proper and everything. And so this is again during the night when we were doing the annual Bridgewater Triangle investigation with Chris and Julie. There's three girls, and this is a man that actually responds to us inside the house. And I don't think this is coming through any of our devices. I think this is a legitimate EVP response because I'm fleeing to the house, telling them that we've had a lot of trials and tribulations and our efforts feel futile. Can you help us? And this man comes through and he goes, there are certain people. And there's another one that comes in right behind it at the tail end. It says, listen, like that. And I'm like, it's just kind of creepy, but it's also personal to me. So I thought I would share that.
All right, we gotta listen to that one more time.
There, with this clip, another thing to keep in mind is that night we were experiencing a tremendous amount of static charge and like K2s going crazy. It was so much like energy, you could just feel it. And that plays and wreaks havoc with your electronics. That's why you hear that zapping sound on there.
I heard that there are certain people. I didn't hear the listen.
It's that big loud crash at the end. Yeah, where it goes, there are certain people and it goes crash. Listen.
Yeah.
Right there. It's like a tap.
Well, yeah. Those are amazing. I mean, those are really, really, really good. I mean, incredible. And like I've said just before on our first episode on the show, I honestly, because you know, there are some places you go and you're like, I don't know if this is haunted, right? And then there are places you go and you're like, I think this is haunted. But then you go to like places like the Peter Oliver House and you're like, this is definitely haunted. Like, it's just, it's definitely, definitely, definitely a very haunted spot in like a cool, nice way. Like, you don't have to go there and worried that like someone's going to come home with you or that you're going to run into something like real scary. Like, it's just a very interesting historical haunted house.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
It's and like I said, there are so many layers and we're just scraping the surface of it over the last 5 years with our case file. We just keep adding to it another piece and another piece as it presents itself. But, you know, artifacts that come back to the house or we find, you know, that adds to the case file and another layer of understanding. So I'm very proud to be a part of this project. And in 10 years, hopefully, if I'm still there, I can turn around and look at a fully restored quarry house and know that doing what we do and putting our love and passion into it and understanding the history and gathering the details save that property and helps it survive. And we did that.
Do you, like, are you alone in the house? Like, are you comfortable being alone in the house? And mm-hmm. what sort of, like, what's your favorite thing that happens there when you're there alone?
Oh my gosh. So I like Britney Spears.
Okay.
Like, no, I like her. Yes.
Hashtag so, free Britney.
Yeah, has, but not from the Oliver House ghost. You won't get it. No. They don't like her.
Oh. Oh, no.
So what I'll do is if I'm there cleaning and things, and I'll go in and do that stuff by myself and I feel fine. You can definitely hear them walking around and talking in the other rooms. Again, that's part of me kind of becoming numb to it over time, mm-hmm. you know, where I kind of just keep moving on, even though I hear it. I just don't let it interfere with what I'm there to do. But I do know that I had Britney Spears playing in the hallway at the on the glass case, my CD player. And I was dancing around and doing silly stuff. You know, I thought, you know what? You guys want a show? Here you go. All of a sudden, boom, stopped. And I was like, I went over to start the radio back because they stopped the CD from playing. And I started it back and went back to work. And I thought, well, maybe it was the power surge. Logically, it can happen, I guess.
Right. That's a natural sort of reaction.
I didn't get to the end of the hallway again to go back into one of the front rooms before they had stopped it again. And I thought, okay. So we've actually asked them, the spirits of the Oliver House, what is the type of music that you don't like? And they'll say, Britney.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. So it's one of those fun things. There have been moments when I've been alone, and I'm not gonna lie, I'm a human being, that you get a little bit rattled about some of the sounds that you hear, like the sliding or somebody walking up steps, and you hear that and you know you're in this house alone. But in your mind, you're still trying to rationalize, what if it's another person in here? You know, what am I to do? You know, so there are times when I get a little bit unnerved. They like to screw with me, I think, particularly with my candles that I put up, the little like the battery operated candles. Mm-hmm. They've been messing with me lately where I use remote controls to turn these on. And I'll push and push and push on the remote to try to get it started and nothing happens. And I'll turn around and then all of a sudden it'll flicker. I'll be like, why didn't it not turn on when I was sitting there trying to get it to turn on? And then I go to do something, turn back around, and then it's on. Yeah. So it's just like, almost like they're trying to let you know what? It will power on when we say it will power on. We can do this too. You don't have to. And I know that they can activate the candles on their own. When we're not in the house, they can turn them on, turn them off, and they love to drain the battery power out of them. The battery should last a while, mm-hmm. but we can power everything up with brand new batteries and come back. Half the batteries are drained within a few days.
Oh.
So they need the juice. Another thing that I like to do when I'm by myself, if I'm going to be cleaning upstairs, is in the middle bedroom, I have a plasma ball that I plug into the wall. And I also have a touch lamp that I plug into the same outlet. And I use this as a tool because I don't have to be in the room to know if they go over to touch that plasma ball to get energy, they're going to activate that touch lamp to turn on inside that room. And so I'll do that a lot as another signal while I'm alone, to be able to see where they're at and what they're up to. Because mm-hmm. if they're touching that plasma bomb, there's a good chance somebody's going to see them later that night because they're Ooh. Fueling up. They're getting ready. They need that energy. So, yeah.
You had mentioned earlier that you had been watching the security footage of a tour today. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just kind of curious, do you catch a lot of that sort of stuff going on the security cameras when there's nobody there? Are the lights turning on and off and everything's just sort of moving around? And
yeah. Goofy? These little security cameras, I am telling you, are the best investigative tool anybody could ever have. Not only for just the safety of the property, but the fact that you can set the sensitivity up. I told them I want to be able to see a fly fart on that camera. If it happens, I want the sensitivity that way. So they've got them super sensitive to everything. And what this does is if there's a shift or a slide or any kind of noise whatsoever, it's going to record for like 24/7. We've been able to, in the house, when nobody's been in the house at night, I would set up REM pods in the children's room for 1 week. I did that. And we got a couple of different footages out of that children's room when nobody was in there of those REM pods being activated on the bed and on the ground next to the blocks. We've also had the sound of what's, it almost sounds like one of the cooking pots that they have kind of slid across the floor or slammed or something. It was really loud and disturbing. It happened about 9:40 or something at night. And I get a message from the team. They was like, there's a loud sound in the house. So I listened to the video. I watch it. And I was like, yeah, nobody's there. So I go to the house on my way home because I had to drop off some stuff anyway. It's about 11 o'clock and walk around expecting to see something out of place because it's definitely something fell or moved. Nothing is out of place. So I don't know where the sound came from and I can't explain it to this day. Shadows in the day, we see shadow people and our security camera caught that in the front parlor in the Ben Franklin room in the sunlight. The camera moves, the motion sensor on the camera moves the camera a little bit, but there's the shadow and the sunlight on the floor and it darts across the floor into the interior part of the room. And I was like, it's the coolest piece of video.
Wow.
I thought, could it be something outside the window? But no, it would be a different travel pattern. This goes inside the house in the exact same place that folks keep claiming they're experiencing the shadow person. In the Ben Franklin room in front of the main painting.
Wow.
Yeah. I think they're a great tool. I don't think hauntings are just exclusive, especially a place that is really haunted legitimately. They just go on. They just keep going on about their daily thing. These are intelligent hauntings. They're not on any kind of time schedule or residual schedule. It is just them going about their daily lives. And we're just lucky enough, even during the daytime there, to be able to interact with them and hear them on the other side.
Oh, that's fabulous. Wow. Shadow people and all sorts of stuff moving. Yeah. So I, sorry. So Amelia's been talking a lot about past life regression stuff lately. And so as you were starting to tell your story about your passion for the Oliver House and how you came to be there and how it was a journey and, you know, this, that, and the next thing. I'm sort of wondering, like, do you think that maybe in a past life you might have been an Oliver? Do you think that you might have had something to do maybe with the Sons of Liberty who took all the stuff out of there and took the house over? And that might be why you feel this drive to kind of restore it? Or are you like, what are you talking about?
Well, Mama, you hit that on the head. I said at the beginning, at the top of this, that I felt like the first time that I saw it, that I was home.
Mm-hmm.
And I treat it as if it is my home. And I respect it like that. It's not. It doesn't belong to me. It belongs to the town of Middleborough, and it belongs to the energies that live within it. It's their home. But I do feel kindred to it. Like, could be an Oliver. Because for some reason, it crawls all up and down me a little bit for people to talk bad about Tories. And I don't know where that comes from. I'm Southern. So, you know, it wouldn't matter to me. At the same time, I have to understand the other side of it. So one thing about it is I feel like the Tories within that house had relationships still with the other side, with the Sons of Liberty. I think that they knew each other. They were able to, you know, socialize with each other on various levels at different times. And mm-hmm. I think it was betrayal. And as far as my drive to restore it, if there is that connection, which I'll never be able to prove if there is, never can.
Nope.
I just have to go by what I feel. I feel like this is the chance to take back what was stolen and to make it right. And by being able to tell the history and tell the stories from Sally's perspective and Peter's diaries and what I've learned about that, I tear up. I cry about it when I sit in her room to think about some of the things that she had to go through as a lady, as a Tory because they were a property and they had a specific purpose, but super intelligent, very well educated, but really didn't have a voice. You just be here and let us men take care of it all. Mm-hmm. And that didn't work out so well, did it?
No, it doesn't seem to have.
No, but I do have this undeniable draw to the house, and it's not going away anytime soon. I'm just going to just trust in it and just follow my heart at all times to make sure that I do right by the property and help build a successful house that community can enjoy for the town, something for them to be proud of, because it really is something.
You belong, you are somehow connected so deeply to the Oliver House. I seriously hope that I someday am so connected to something that mm-hmm. that it's that kind of connection. So I envy your connection.
Well, I mean, you come spend enough time with me alone in the house and you may find your connection to it where you don't find it with a large group of people at an event. You know, it's that one-on-one time in there mm-hmm. and your own personal journey with it. And time after time, that's what teams say, you know, that they'll come in and I don't think they really know what to expect. You know, maybe we're going to catch an EVP, maybe not, you know, or maybe it's quiet. Maybe it ain't, I don't know. It's not scripted. Right. You can't tell. But they walk away and then they come back and they say, I love this place. This place is amazing. It is so active. And I just feel home. Like, this is a home. And if there's one thing I want people to feel is that welcome home. Welcome.
And I have to say, the time that I went, I felt very welcome. The time that we went in, when Amelia and I went with Brian, I had, and I think I talked about this when we talked about our adventure, but I had gone in the back room to fill out the waiver form, and somebody came up behind me and just patted my hair and then moved on. So it's not the sort of place where, like, so when we went to the Mid-Orange Correctional Facility, which that episode will be coming out later this season too, it was a hostile feeling. There's no hostile feeling whatsoever in the Oliver House, zombie boy and all. Right?
No, he's just something, he's someone trapped mm-hmm. and he needs help in order to get closure. And mm-hmm. we're going to do what we can in the days to come to try to give that to him. Can I give a shout out real quick to the volunteers?
Yeah, of course.
This is not something that just Christy does. No, I'm not that powerful, but it takes an army. It really does. And so I'd like to take time to thank the volunteers that come out to do the paranormal events. And our group is growing. Every time I turn around, we get a new one and a new one. And local people here in the community here. I'd like to say to the main ones that have been there this whole journey, that would be Chris Andrade, who is the assistant manager for the Oliver Ghost Tours. And I'd like to say thank you to her because she's like my ride or die. Literally, if I can't be there, I need her there. But she has a tremendous passion for it. Paul Heber, who is also our tech person, he came on board in the beginning. Lynn and Peggy Hunt, husband and wife team that live in the Bridgewater area. They visit us from time to time and help out when they can. We have a woman from New Hampshire. She makes a little haul down there in order to do these events. And her name is Christina Willer. And she's very like attuned and psychically attached in some way to everything that's going on. I mean, she walks in and she knows exactly what's going on where. I'm not quite like that. I think it's I'm in there so much and I have to hear it when nobody else is that I kind of tune it down a little bit or else I'll never get anything accomplished. I'm like, yeah, go ahead. Talk all you want. Anyway, so we have those volunteers and we've had some new people that signed on recently. Brian Quinn, Alex Mitchell, Elizabeth Ginsburg, and I can't remember the girl's last name and I always butcher her first. I'll just say Alicia. We got one more, Steve Bowden. He's been there for a couple of years now. Great, great person. But not only do we do the volunteer for the paranormal, but there's also a great group of volunteers in the community that takes care of the grounds. And this is something that just came about over the last couple of years. We now have master gardeners.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes. And the master gardeners are there like 3 days a week. they're weeding things or making sure the lawn work is kept up. The plantings are being done. They're doing woodland gardens. And I'd like to give a shout out to Pat Belize and Barbara Alcini for their efforts. And also they do peas at the house in the summertime on the back patio area. They have their goodies in the garden events where you can come and have some tea and some dessert and kind of look around the grounds. And so we have those actually going on in July, so people can visit and do that and help support the house. Also, we do historic tours. So I usually volunteer when I can to be there, but we have people with the town that actually come in and help do those as well. For you get an hour tour, you know, to help support the house. Mm-hmm. And right now we have a tour guide by the name of Jessica Lieb that does that on Wednesdays and sometimes Saturdays, like she's doing today, because I have other things. But our main goal at the Oliver House, whether you're into spirits or whether you're into history, I think the two worlds have to come together and they have to work in unison in some way. So it's important for us to give communities an opportunity to come, whatever you're into. If you really like history, come for the history. If you're in it for ghosts, come for the ghosts. But you're going to get the history with the ghost anyway, because you need to know who you're talking to.
Fair enough.
You have to do that. But yeah, it's coming along. And I'd like to see more weddings there. We've had a couple of weddings inside the house, small weddings. Had Ooh. One actually on Friday the 13th.
Ah, nice.
I was like, that's not an omen.
At the Oliver House.
Yes, they had their wedding there and they're still married. So,
you know, I met my husband on Friday the 13th and everyone always laughs about it that, of course, like the guy I ended up with, that's the day I would meet him. So one of my friends was like, well, Amelia, it was that or Halloween. So I don't know. I look at it as it's a nice date for me.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Christy. I know you do have an investigation you have to get to right after this, so we won't keep
you
too long. So if people want to reach out to you, if they want to find out more about the Oliver House, they want to see a tour, where's the best way to find you?
You can email me at oliverhousechristy@gmail.com. And that's all one word. So you'll probably take a nap midstream of typing, but you'll get there when you wake up. Okay. You can also visit our Facebook page, which is Oliver House MA. And on our Facebook page, we list our upcoming events, whether you're interested in historic tours or goodies in the gardens or a ghost tour, public ghost tour, or even if you want to investigate privately with your team, you get in touch with us that way because I answer all the messages. Those are the best ways to reach us.
Okay, great. So awesome. That's emailing Oliver House Christy, all one word, and Christy is spelled Christy, mm-hmm. right, at Gmail, yes. Or Oliver House MA on Facebook.
That's right.
Awesome.
All right. Well, thank you so, so, so much, Christy. We've had so much fun with you here today.
Thank you.
As always, for our listeners, if you want to find out more about Ghost Hunting in New England, you can find us online at ghosthuntinginnewengland.com, facebook.com/ghosthuntinginnewengland, on Twitter, Ghost Hunting NE, on Instagram at Ghost Hunting New England, or send us an email or your drive-by ghosting at ghosthuntinginnewengland@gmail.com. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review and like and subscribe to our podcast. And as always,
happy hunting.